Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Alyssa.
And I'm Amy. Melissa, you know, I was thinking way too long about this today that I'm just wondering, like, with everyone still in quarantine and schools not opening for the rest of the year, like, I sincerely wonder if missing persons cases would go up or would they decrease?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I would say decrease because there's less travel. But there's also, and I feel like there's increased communication.
You think so?
Yeah, I feel like people are like, you hear of all the Zoom meetings and house parties, and it's an app, people, not like actual parties.
Right.
Type things. I don't know.
See, I wondered if it would be the opposite because everyone's at home and you can probably watch, get a sense of routine when kids are outside.
And I mean, if you ever want to leave your life, this is a good time to do it.
Well, isn't that the truth?
So I don't know. Well, now I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a valid question. And I only thought of it because of a lot of schools are now closing for the rest of the year. And, you know, we were talking in another episode about nosy neighbors, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I, for one, am actually thankful for nosy neighbors. And I just kind of wanted to, like, reemphasize, like, this is a time when just look out a little bit more. I mean, we wouldn't want it to increase, of course.
Yeah, that's totally reasonable. I agree with you.
So I know you wanted to throw out a little reminder.
Yes. So, y'all, I know that quarantine has been quarantine for everyone.
Taxing.
Yes, taxing. That's a good word. That being said, next week is Memorial Day. Amy and I are going to enjoy the holiday and take a week off. If you are a VIP Patreon, you will still get your bonus content that week. That is still coming. But our normal episode, we're going to take a week. We'll be back the 1st of June. If you're Patreon, you'll get it May 31st. But ready for summer and for some new cases. But we are going to take the week.
Yeah, I mean, don't think we won't be sitting there in our own time going through cases and saying, hey, file that back for later.
Yeah, we just want to take a day to enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Okay.
Thanks.
So the case I'm going to do today is one that I stumbled across because I don't know how many people do this, but I go through the Charlie Project. If you have not heard of the Charlie Project, this is something in the United States only, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was foreign to a lot of people. But it's, in essence, really a database of missing persons, and it's organized either chronologically or alphabetically. So,
or by state.
Or by state, absolutely. And it's just a record of all these missing people. Some of them have little to no information. Some of them have a ton of information. But I always think it's fascinating to go through them. So I just stumbled upon this case and I became fascinated. I went to research, and there's not that much on this poor person. And her family and or friends have a Facebook page dedicated to finding out information. And there was only like 800 followers, which kind of made me sad in terms of the other Facebook family pages I've seen. I'm not even talking about like Amora Murray, who has thousands and thousands of followers, but you know, there are several thousands for other people, and this person only had around 800. So I said, there's not a lot of information, but her case deserves to be put out there. So
yeah, I agree with that.
Today, I'm going to talk to you about Joan Renee Cook. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Joan was born on February 2nd of 1965. Joan married Mike Cook, and they lived in Salem, Virginia. And they had been married 22 years by the time that she had disappeared. And they had a 7-year-old daughter between them named Ashlyn. Joan worked, and she was an administrative assistant at a retirement home or like a retirement community. Now, although Mike and Joan's marriage has never been described as very happy, it really started to disintegrate around 2007. Shortly before Mike and Joan separated, Mike had moved to Iowa, and he did this to secure a job and settle before Joan and Ashlyn could join him out there. Now, I guess they weren't planning for a divorce at this point or anything like that, because if you're going to move your whole family to a completely different state, I anticipate that you had some plan of being together. Nevertheless, within 3 months of Mike's departure, Joan had started dating someone.
Whoa.
Yes. So to me, that kind of says, yeah, the relationship was probably over to some degree. There was really no mourning period, and she jumped right into it.
Yeah, part of me says, like, when he moved, was she obviously had no intention of following him. She was like, yeah, sounds good. You go. Bye.
Yeah, maybe so. I didn't actually think of that, but maybe. So Mike found out, and he decided to move back.
What?
Yeah. He went looking for a position. It's not like he gained employment and got moved out there. For whatever reason, they picked Iowa. I don't know the reason, but he went out there to secure a job and to secure a home.
And it sounds like found out his wife was having an affair, so moved back to try to figure out his marriage.
That's what it would seem like to me.
I mean, that's just my interpretation.
Yeah. So although Mike never made direct threats, Joan's sister, who was interviewed, claimed that Mike had left nails behind the tires of Joan's boyfriend's car. He was also accused of stalking Joan and her boyfriend. Now, I don't know to what degree that was, but I think that he sat outside where they worked and just kind of watched what they were doing or where they were going. And I don't know why, if he already knew that they were having an affair. I mean, what's left to find out?
Part of me says, well, was he trying, were him and Joan, like, working on things, and then he was like, what are you doing?
There's really nothing that I read that stated anything like that. It seems like it was never really a happy marriage. It was more like a, this is what's comfortable, and they were separated already, so I anticipate divorce was part of the discussion.
When he moved back, did he move back in with Joan?
So I don't know if there was a period where he didn't, but inevitably they did share a home. They were in separate beds, separate bedrooms.
That's messy.
It can be. Sure, I've heard of people that somehow have these arrangements, and I'm no one to judge, because sometimes it's what's best for their family and it works out really well. So that's why I can't jump to any conclusions here. By 2009, Joan and her boyfriend were living together. Now, I know I just said that Joan and her husband were kind of living together, and how that worked was that on weekends, Joan's boyfriend would leave to visit his own daughter. Then Joan would return home to Mike and Ashlyn. They lived relatively separate lives, like I said, and they really didn't ask what the other person was doing or where they were going or anything like that. So it was like a come and go as you please situation. That brings us to Joan's disappearance. So
just so you know, I don't like any of this already.
I could tell. I really could tell. I know when you're speechless, your mind's going.
Yep. Go ahead.
On January 24th of 2010, Joan left her home at 11:45 p.m. to go to a friend's house. I looked up the weather and things like that because Virginia can't be too different from Connecticut. Like, in January, it's probably cold. So it, in fact, was cold and rainy. It was, like, in the 40s. But nevertheless, she has a duffel bag. She has another bag, a purse, wallet, house key, and her cell phone. And she heads to this friend's house. We don't know if Joan ever made it to this friend's house because this friend wasn't home. And it's really unclear to me if she ever knew if the friend was home or not. Nevertheless, that's where she was heading. The last phone call that was made was about an hour and 15 minutes before at 10:30. And we know that she made that phone call. She spoke with that friend. And this is not the same friend that she was going to see. It was a different friend.
Was it like a normal phone call?
Yes. Nothing appeared out of the ordinary.
Okay.
So the last text that was sent from Joan's phone was at 5 a.m. on January 25th. And it was to that friend that was not home, and it simply stated, "I love you."
Was the friend male or female?
To be honest, it didn't specify, but it did seem as if it was a female. It seemed like that's what the implication.
I mean, and it doesn't matter either way. I'm just curious. Like, I say that I love you to my best friend, but it would be weird to just text it out of nowhere.
And that was the only thing that was said, so... Yeah, I think that out of context, it makes no sense to me.
All right, go ahead. Keep going.
So after not showing up for work on Monday, this was out of the ordinary for her. So her job contacts her sister, and her sister doesn't know, so she contacts Mike. And at that point, he files a missing persons report. So police started to investigate. They talked to everyone. They actually brought in cadaver dogs. They searched the front and the back of the house and around the house, and they found no blood evidence. Joan's boyfriend was ruled out. There was no evidence to support he had any involvement. He was known to be with his daughter. They interviewed Ashlyn, and Ashlyn didn't hear anything that night. And I know she's seven. It's really hard to really gain anything from interviewing a child, but that's in fact what she said. And they obviously interviewed Mike. Now, it might seem a little weird at first, like you didn't notice that your wife was gone and never came back. But like I said earlier, they were in a position in their life where they were coming and going as they pleased. So he just figured she was going out for a few days. That's kind of what she did. It wasn't a new behavior. So he didn't really think anything of it until her sister called and said, you know, she didn't show up for work. So they really had nothing else to go on at that point. About 6 months later, after Joan's disappearance, without notifying authorities, Mike took Ashlyn and they moved to Iowa. When police found out, Ashlyn temporarily went to stay with some relatives while Mike fully cooperated with authorities. As soon as they were finished and found nothing, they returned Ashlyn to him. And that is it. Nothing else has ever come from this investigation. They still don't know what happened to her. There's no evidence of foul play in the home. Like I said, Ashlyn didn't hear anything. There's been no other use of her cell phone or communication after that 5 a.m. call. They've never found any of her things. It's as if she literally vanished.
Okay.
You hate it.
I hate it. I have so many questions, but I'm going to let you keep going.
Well, that's it, because nothing else has come up. There's nothing to support that Mike ever came back, and he's resumed his life living in Iowa. I know that they were able to keep a family connection between Jones' family and Ashlyn. Like, they, I don't want to say they're friendly by any means, but Mike allows the communication between Ashlyn and Jones' family, even though there's probably some contention there.
So what are the theories?
The theories are, did she walk away? Now, she's been known to stay away for days at a time. Would it have been odd for her to just leave her life? I mean, I've heard more compelling evidence before for someone to not have left their life. So I certainly think it's possible. And the fact that her things have never been recovered is also something, too. Now, there was a ping from her cell phone that was from an area of getting in or on or off the interstate, but nothing in anything that I read really provided any insight as to what that meant. And that was not like later down the road. That was sometime on the evening that she disappeared. So if you were to take that and look at it from a perspective of she left her life, I don't know. Could she have gone on the highway to leave?
Well, I have a question.
Sure.
She texted the person whose house she went to, correct?
Yes, yes.
So law enforcement knows whose house she went to.
Well, yes, because they were able to determine that this friend was actually not in town.
And the friend didn't talk to her?
I'm not sure. This friend has never, to my knowledge, given any interviews. Now, I scoured a lot of places for information and YouTube, Reddit, and there was nothing that gave any information about that.
So that's weird because, okay, let's pretend my husband and I are cohabitating but aren't together, which is weird. And I decide that one night, 11:30 in the rain, I'm going to go to my best friend's house. Mm-hmm. My best friend lives 4 miles from me. Sure. So, no, she does. So if I want to walk, I theoretically I could. Yes. Never going to happen, but let's pretend. So I have my phone with me.
Sure.
I walk to her house. She's not home. Then what? If it's me, I would have called before and I would have driven, but if I walked, I would have called her then and been like, are you coming home? Are you going to be like, can I stay? Should I leave?
Right. And if you can't get a hold of them by calling, which would be traceable in 2010, you would text.
Right. Right. It'd be weird if I walked to her house at 11 p.m. I get there, it's like 12:30, right? Not home. And then I text her 5 hours later, I love you.
Well, right. Absolutely.
That's not what happened.
You know what? I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you. It doesn't make any sense at all. What are you going to do? Go to your friend's house and wait outside? Or...
But you would... Okay, so let's say I go to her house, right? And she's not home. Mm-hmm. I call her up and I say, Jay, are you home? No, I'm not. Okay, great. Are you coming home? Because I'm at your house with luggage.
Right.
I plan on staying here. She's either going to say, no, I'm not coming home, or yes, I am. Mm-hmm. If she says, no, I'm not coming home, I would assume the next words out of her mouth would be, where are you going to go?
And it would either be like, oh, to another friend's house, which you'd call. Maybe if, worst case scenario, you don't give anyone a heads up, or you go back home.
Yeah, that's not what happened. She didn't go to her friend's house.
So you think she was heading somewhere else?
I'd like to know how law enforcement deduced that was the friend's house she was going to.
Because that 10:30 call wasn't to the same friend.
Okay, does she only have two friends?
No, but I'm saying, when you hear that she made a 10:30 phone call to a friend, people, I think, would assume that it's the friend that you're going to see saying, hey, I'm coming. But it's not.
Right, but it wasn't. But how did police deduce that the friend that she was going to see is that friend?
Right, other than they're holding something back, or...
They have to be. Because I don't know how they would get there. She leaves the bags.
Yep.
And texts her friend and tells Mike.
Yep.
I assume that she's leaving to go to her friend's house.
Right, so that's Mike's word.
Right, so let's say I believe him for one second. I'm walking to this person's house. See you later, bye. Great. My suspicion is it was another guy. Because if Mike was already stalking the first one, she's not about to be like, oh, by the way, I'm going to see someone else.
Well, that actually brings us to another theory. And that's, of course, the husband, Mike. Granted, he's not so much a husband, but that's even more of a motive.
Right. I agree with that. And again, like I said, I hate narratives that they all come from one person because he's the only person. Except for a 7-year-old is smart enough to know if something happened when they were aware of it. How old's your son?
7.
Okay. If you and your partner got into a altercation and the police said, hey, son, what happened between your parents? He could tell them.
At a bare minimum, he could say mommy or daddy were really mad.
Right. Give your kid a little more credit than that. If there was a physical altercation, he could say mom hit dad hit mom, whatever happened.
So we can assume that if there was a physical altercation, it didn't take place before 10:30. Because she was
right.
Talking to a friend. So it's safe to say that most likely a 7-year-old, not all the time, but most likely a 7-year-old is in bed before 10:30.
But now my question is, how loud is an altercation?
Well, yeah, that's where I was going with that is, so she's in bed and an altercation happens. Now, she may or may not have heard it depending on how it took place, correct?
Yeah, I think it's risky, though. He may have just gotten lucky and she slept through it and they were quiet enough, but I can't imagine that Joan would have been quiet enough to keep her 7-year-old asleep, and if they brought in cadaver dogs, we would have known if it happened at the house.
This is true, but if you're getting into a domestic with someone, first of all, the aggressor, and I'm not identifying a man or a woman here, just so we're clear, because it could be either one or both or many different scenarios. So,
yep.
The aggressor is angry and going at the other person, and the other person doesn't want the child to wake up and see anything, so they're submissing.
But there would be blood, right?
Well, yeah, that is the issue with that, but
unless it happened not at the house and she left and he followed her.
On the other hand, you just punch someone and knock them straight out. There might not be any blood.
But then how do you kill them?
He could have left the house with her and been really lucky that his daughter never woke up.
Right. And that's a lot of luck. And I'm not saying it's not possible.
I'm playing out a scenario. This man is innocent. As of today, I'm just following kind of where the story's taking us. So I just want to be clear.
Yeah, and we know you guys all hate us couching that stuff, but it's important to us to say it's just a theory.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my opinion about the husband. Even if he came back from Iowa pissed, which he would have a right to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he was stalking her and her new boyfriend, which I'd like to know how they're defining stalking. Because if it's him fighting for his marriage in a way that she doesn't want, that could be considered stalking to her.
Yeah.
So my opinion is he had plenty of time to do it. And while her boyfriend is away, yes, that's an opportunity, but your 7-year-old plays a factor.
Yes.
I don't necessarily like the husband. I don't necessarily, and I know the husband always does it. I know that. But I don't necessarily like that.
So he comes back from Iowa after 3 months, and he's there for a considerable amount of time before she disappears. Like, he's back 2009, I believe, and she goes missing in 2010. If he came back angry, he probably would have immediately done something. Although, on the other hand, she didn't actually leave him. What if she had packed her duffel bag that night and said, "I'm leaving you for good"? And what we know about intimate partner violence is that the most dangerous time to leave someone, or the time that you're in most danger, is the first several days to weeks after you leave.
That's fair.
Now, I do want to preface this with saying there's no evidence that there was ever intimate partner violence between the two.
And I also would say, why would you leave him on a night where your boyfriend is out of town if you're going to be with your boyfriend? Wouldn't you do and a night when you're with your kid? Wouldn't you do it when you're like, it's a Sunday afternoon, you're going back to live with your boyfriend for the week, and you're like, hey, by the way, I'm not coming back next weekend?
True. There's some conflicting information about this living situation. Now, people say that she was devoted and would never leave her daughter. But on the other hand, she kind of came and went as she pleased, and she sometimes did leave for several days. I don't know what that means. I don't know really how to make sense of that. But I think that compromises kind of what I think could have happened too. It will at least complicates it in my head.
I support that. I just can't wrap my head around what happened when she walked out of the house. I don't understand the story. And I don't know. I'm dying to know how law enforcement knows what friend she went to visit.
That's an excellent question. And I, you know, I scoured and I looked for.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I'm not saying that you missed it. And I don't think it's out there. I think it's one of the things law enforcement is holding back. So my question is, where is she? Like, not where is she? That too, but how does law enforcement know where she went? Cell phone pings? Maybe. But I just don't buy the whole... She was going to walk to a friend's house and didn't know she was home. I think if we believe that, if we believe Mike's story, that she packed some bags and was like, hey, I'm going to a friend's house. See you later. Bye. I think she was going to see another guy.
It's definitely possible. Like, if she didn't know that she was obviously going to go missing, like if she met with foul play. She right. tells Mike, thinking, he's not going to check in where I am, and I'll be back.
And he's not going to tell her boyfriend where she
right.
is. And if he does tell her boyfriend, she went to a friend's house.
Right. And she meets with this person, and no one knows any different.
Right.
Or she leaves with the intention of going to a friend's house. Why she would go and not confirm that her friend's home, I don't know. But let's just say for a minute she did. Could she have randomly met with foul play? She's walking at nearly midnight with bags to a friend's house.
I mean, yes. Yes, that's possible.
But nothing's ever been recovered. And I feel like if you're not so concerned about covering your tracks... Do you really care where you dump the items?
All right. I think she left her life with a different guy.
You think so?
Yeah.
So the only other time this has happened is Brian Schaefer, I think.
I just think that packing bags to me with no actual destination, either Michael's lying and he knows something, or... She was lying when she left her house. Because, again, I just... And y'all tell me. If you would pack a bag and walk to a friend's house without knowing their home, please, enlighten me. I just can't wrap my head around it. And then I think about the fact that, okay, let's say I got met... Let's say her and Michael got in a fight.
And she leaves, packs bags, she's like, I'm out. I'm going to a friend's house. Her boyfriend's out of town. Why she's walking, I still don't know, because she had a car, I assume, but either way. And then you get there, and like I said, they're not home. What then?
I agree.
Unless you were going to meet someone that was picking you up, and you didn't need to go to the friend's house, you never made it to the friend's house.
But wouldn't there be a phone trail of an unknown number police have come across? And they would follow that lead.
Oh, like the person that was picking her up?
Possibly. I mean, she could have seen this person earlier in the day. She could have been working with this person and said, meet you tonight.
She could have said, I'll leave my house at 10:30. I'll meet you on the corner of my road at 10:35. Don't call me. Don't text me. Because if I'm late, I don't want my husband to know I'm leaving.
That's true, too.
And then she got to the corner of her road. The person was there, jumped in the car. And they're going to run away together and tosses her phone off the interstate.
And this isn't 15, 20 years ago. I mean, in 2010, people knew that your cell phones could ping your location.
Right. What do you think?
Well, before I tell you that, what do you make of Mike picking up and moving to Iowa with his daughter after only 6 months and not telling authorities?
Okay, I'm going to give it to you twice. I'm going to give it to you as if he's not involved. And in his head, he's like, you know what? I don't know where this woman is. I moved to Iowa to try to better our family. She had an affair. She didn't want to be with me anymore. I live with her and try to make it work. She goes missing. I know I'm not involved, which means she left me, as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to worry about our daughter and make a better life, and I'm going to go take the job I want to get, and that's that. If she ever shows up again, great, she can find me in Iowa.
That's fair.
And he's probably angry, and rightly so.
It certainly makes sense.
If he's involved, he moved to get out of the police spotlight and not telling authorities. My gut says if she does this, if she goes away for days and she does these things, he was just like, you know what? I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter doesn't need the speculation. My daughter doesn't need the media attention. She's now, you know, she's 7, so she's old enough to see the news. You can shelter her as much as you try, but at school and things of that nature, she'll be exposed to it. So I think that if he's guilty, it was to get out of Dodge and just be not part of it.
You know, when I thought about it, I didn't think too much of it either. When people move, it's not like it was 20 years ago. Sorry for that example again. But where you change your whole phone number. People take their cell phones with them. You have the same number you did in area code as you did wherever you used to live.
I've had my phone number for 17 years.
Yes. And I've had friends that have moved and they still carry the same number and area code as the place they originated from.
Yeah.
You keep your cell phone number for a long time in a lot of cases. So for him, I could see him being like, well, they have my phone number. They have my contact information. Nothing about my phone number is changing. They can call me if they need any information, which they actually inevitably did. I got no impression that they had to hunt hard to find him in Iowa. And then he cooperated with authorities.
I think about in my situation. So if I was to disappear.
Yep.
Just up and leave. First of all, it's not going to happen. My husband's not going to get rid of me that easy. But let's pretend I did. My family, my nuclear family is here. My parents, my sister, they've moved here. Now, my husband's sister has moved here with her husband and our niece. But his parents still live up New Hampshire. So if I went missing and he, you know, didn't have the family here he would wanted, if he moved back to New Hampshire, that wouldn't be that odd.
Right.
It would be because we like it here. But in the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't be that odd. Assuming he's innocent.
Right. So you asked me what I thought, and I actually originally thought that it was just random foul play. And then I talked myself out of it, and you brought up that she might have been going to see someone completely different. And I hadn't even thought of that. And I'm kind of riding that wave. It makes sense.
I just need to know where she was going. You know, let's pretend that we believe the whole thing. We've walked through this 4 or 5 times already. I just don't. If she goes to the friend's house, if I show up on Jay's doorstep and I say, hey, I'm here. And she's like, hey, I'm not home. I'm going to call her and say, hey, I'm outside your house in the rain. And she's going to say, oh, cool, I'm not home.
Yeah, you're not going to be like, I'm going to make a tent on your front lawn.
And wait, especially in the era of cell phones. This isn't, like you said, 20 years ago where you can't do that.
You can call a cab. You can walk back. You have options.
You can call your boyfriend and say, hey, I'm in a jam. If you can't help me, can one of your friends?
Yeah, so she's not optionless.
And her phone, I assume, shut off and never used again.
Of course. Nothing was ever used.
So whoever she saw that night is involved, if it's not Michael.
Whether it's sinister or not, yes.
Yes, because they would have come forward and been like, hold up. So she went to a friend's house, and then I saw her.
Yeah.
If it was completely innocent. Yes.
I think that it is plausible, and it makes realistic sense.
Yeah, I think that she... I'd like to know... Please have her cell phone records. I'd like to know who else that she was talking to. And it's one of those things. It's very much like Holly Cantrell. You know, families don't want to speak badly because it looks... Not that it's a bad thing, and not that any people will judge you for it, but, you know, they don't want to say... Yes, she was seeing other people.
Yeah.
Because it is frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
Or she didn't tell anyone because it's frowned upon.
Yeah, maybe so.
I mean, think about if you had an affair and you guys were just cohabitating and you were still seeing your boyfriend, right? And your family and friends were like, okay, we'll be supportive of it. Do you, whatever. Then you meet another guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a difficult conversation to say, hey, hold up, guys. I know I told you I was leaving my spouse for this person, but now there's this person.
Right. I really want to know more about her as a person. Was she...
And this is all speculation. I have no idea. But I can tell you she didn't go to her friend's house that night unless law enforcement can say... No, we have, like, video that she did. Okay, then what happened?
Right.
I want to know from law enforcement how they know she went to that friend's house. Or is that just their logic? That friend lived 2 miles away, and they assume that's where she was going. Because, you know, things get reported as fact pretty quick, even when they're not fact.
Well, lastly, that 5 a.m. text message to the friend, I love you. Do you think that had an alternate meeting? Do you think that it was just random? Do you think someone else texted it?
And we don't know where the phone was when it was texted?
No, like the ping that I talked about where it showed her location, there was no indication to me that it was definitely at the same time that the text was sent.
I think the location of the phone matters as well as... I need to know the relationship of the friend she went to see.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I need to know. I try to think of a situation where I would text my best friend out of the blue and just be like, I love you. And it would be in a situation where I needed help with something or needed her to have my back in something. And she did. And then the situation was over. And I was like, hey, I love you. Mm-hmm. You know?
I could see that.
Like, if I showed up at her house and she was there, and I said, I'm leaving my life, and I need you to have my back, so this is what's going to happen, I need you to drive me to the train station, and she did, and she said, hey, when you make it wherever you're going safely, let me know, I'd shoot her I love you text.
I get that.
Then I get a burner phone and stay in touch with her. But
maybe.
Now I either way, she left her life.
I think I'm on
that's
this,
my
I'm
opinion.
I'm on this with you.
I guess if I was going to do it and go, and I lost my mind and didn't want to tell my family, my best friend would be who I told.
Huh. That's a tough one. I don't know, but I think that's where I'm landing. I feel like enough points to that conclusion where I feel okay saying that.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of evidence of anything else.
Right.
And again, the absence of evidence is not, does not mean that that is evidence in of itself. But police have her cell phone data. They know, police know where she went.
And unless at some point the phone was shut off or died.
Yeah. She left her life. I can't believe I'm saying this because I don't land here very often.
I know. And I agree with you.
And I mean, we don't ever land on people. But please tell us that we're wrong. Like, I'd love a good debate here. I would love that for someone to come at us and say, no, here's why she didn't. And I understand that she had a 7-year-old daughter, and that's a challenge in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard thing to get past because I don't understand leaving your child. But it sounds like she was leaving her for a week at a time to live with her boyfriend or days at a time to go do whatever. Mm-hmm. Please tell me why I'm wrong.
Yes, I'm totally open to it. And I'm glad to be wrong. If you support...
Me too. I would love
if
that.
If you have some great supporting information, I'm so glad to be wrong. So let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you think. That's all I've got.
Yeah. I agree. This is a good one. I want to go, like, Google and try to find cell phone pings.
Please do. Bring it back to me, Melissa.
I'm sure that you would have found it if I could have, but... Call up the police department.
All right, guys. So we won't, well, I can't say we won't see you next week because we don't see you, but.
And we're in quarantine, so we won't see anyone.
That's true.
But yeah.
So you won't be hearing from us next week. So we hope that you take the time to, whatever it is, self-care, listen to another podcast. We've certainly recommended several over many of our episodes.
Or you could join Patreon and get 5 full-length episodes plus 4 bonus episodes and a bonus episode that'll drop next week.
There's that, too. You could take the time to email us.
Just saying.
Or debate with us. Whatever. I could go down the list. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you the same time, same place, not next week, but the week after.
All right. Bye. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Megan Hutchinson. Audio production by Amy Lamar.